What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that's almost ready for Christmas. On this episode, the best 3-3 to take place outside of the Middle East this past weekend. Let's not be having you, as Norwich fans turn on Dean Smith. We look ahead to the best of the Boxing Day games and profile two more EFL standouts in the scouting report. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. How are you doing, listener? We are recording just a couple of days out from Christmas, but there's plenty of festive football for us to get our teeth into. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined today by Adrian Clark.
Hello.
And Sam Parkin's back with us too.
Hello, Matt.
Hello to you both. Clark, you were right. Argentina won the World Cup. I thought you might like a moment or two to crow about that.
I only need a moment. Yeah, I've spent the last couple of days just walking around with a smug face. But people were doubting me. Throughout, I had a lot of people coming for me saying Argentina are rubbish. Have you seen them play? But yeah, no, it was great. It was a fairy tale ending, and I don't know. I just thought it was really good. It's just such a good story for football that Messi got to win the World Cup final, and for it to be, I would say, the greatest World Cup final we've ever seen as well. It was dream territory, wasn't it? So yeah, well done to them all. And you got to love Emi Martinez, formerly of the EFL Parish, of course. Did the hard yards. Where did he go? Oxford, Rotherham, Reading, Sheffield Wednesday.
You read my mind. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
lots of
just
them.
The one game at Oxford, which probably tanks him in the eyes of Sam. But yeah, he's a World Cup winner.
What do we think of his shithousery, Sam? What are you making of it? I'm all for it. I think it's part of the game, isn't it?
Nah, I'm not so sure myself. Not so sure. I'd like the referee maybe to have taken action a little bit earlier. Mm. That'd have been nice. If he was, can you be sent off in a penalty shootout? That would have been
quite funny.
An extra element, wouldn't it?
Neither of you two took pens, did you?
I did.
Probably double. I took about maybe 10 dozen, maybe reluctantly.
Right, no good. Smash them down the middle, side foot it, Messi style or what?
Well, the lads at Swindon, I've probably told this story before, used to think I was incredibly good and confident at penalties because I took them with both feet, but that was because I didn't really know what to do at any stage of my career when I was 12 yards out. So I mixed up because I was relatively two-footed.
Hey, seriously cocky. And I like it. I'm all for it.
No, because I didn't know which one was better. I didn't know to smash
which,
it, place
which,
it.
Which of my feet is the strongest? They're both so strong.
I changed. No, they're both average. But, you know, as a striker, kind of all eyes fall on you, don't they, when the ref points to the spot. So, yeah, I used to have to step up, even though I had zero power in my shooting.
I was a penalty taker. I normally went the Messi side where he went in the final, and I only missed one. And that was when I went across my body, and I was, fuming.
Listener, if you're interested, I always used to go bottom left and I never missed any. So there you go. As I mentioned, we are powered by Quinbet. If you want to find out the latest offers that they've got, just head to quinbet.com/promotions and you can do just that. Do give us a follow as well on Twitter if you like, at EFLWhatThe is the place to do that. All right, today we are going to start by looking back at the best of the weekend's games. Now then, what was the best 3-3 draw you saw this weekend, listener? Was it in Doha or was it at the CBS Arena? There might not have been an Mbappe or a Messi on show in the West Midlands, but who needs those two when you've got Jonathan Panzo and Joel Pirro? Sam, it looked like this was going to be the perfect way for Coventry to celebrate the fact that they can play at the CBS Arena until the end of the season, but they didn't play until the end of this game.
No, crazy game. Brilliant game. Great spectacle. Yeah, and Swansea, I fudged this a little bit at the weekend on the telly when I was talking about it, but yeah, they're all slow starters. Swansea City, this has happened a lot. Maybe not the 3-0 deficit that they had to claw back. But yeah, they've been losing in 11 of their 23 games this season. I don't know, Clarkey, what do you think about this? That's happened. Yeah, they've taken 14 points from losing positions. So they finished games incredibly strong. My theory, now that I've had a couple of days to stew on it, maybe something to do with the possession, dictating, tiring the opponent out. Is that a tactic somewhat?
Could be, you know what it's like. Second half, you're starting to breathe out your backside, and you can't get a kick of the ball, and the opposition are knocking it around for fun. Yeah, I can see that. Absolutely, I can see it. But they've got a look, haven't they, at their sort of mentality from the start of matches? Because you can't keep coming from behind. That's crazy.
Yeah, and I suppose it's a style of play where the opponent obviously knows how they're going to get success. And I think Coventry did it to them in the first half in terms of going and closing from the front when they're trying to play out. And that seems to be the stick that people beat Russell Martin with in terms of his own supporters. So whether he's got the players good enough to do what he's trying to do, we'll probably know by the end of this season. But yeah, Coventry executed their game plan really well. I thought Hamer joined the front two of O'Hare and Jokeres really well to close and nick the ball and cause them problems in transition. And in the second half, he saved it really, Russell Martin, by being aggressive, proactive with his changes. He made four just after they went 3-0 down, changed the shape. They started with a back four, went to a three. Joe Allen and Ollie Cooper in particular were inspiring substitutions, and Liam Cullen, another one, got the equalising goal with his first touch. So incredible recovery. They would have been buoyant. Coventry would have been deflated. But yeah, brilliant game. I thought that Callum Doyle may be as good as he is with the football. We saw that at Sunderland last season, the centre-half, he got a little bit exposed for a couple of the Swansea goals, and that was because McFadden was out for Coventry. So I think his presence alone could have maybe made a difference and seen them get all 3 points. But yeah, brilliant game. And I think they need to find some consistency, Swansea, because, you know, reading a bit of the reaction from the supporters, not all seems well there. Russell Martin needs some victories.
Yeah, going back to the way they start games, I think for the first 15, 20, I think when you're a possession team and you want to play out from the back and you want to knock the ball around, it's a really bad cliche about earning the right. But the first 15, 20 minutes, you've got to just scrap it, haven't you? You've got to come out flying and go toe-to-toe with whoever you're up against. And then once the game set was down, then I would imagine then out football them. But trying to do it from the start can, I think, as Sam points out, be a recipe for disaster, because that's when teams are freshest and when they want to, you know, they'll come after you with the press. And obviously they're getting a lot of success.
And when you say that, Clarkie, as well, like how paramount did the forward players used to be in that, in earning the right, you know, turning the balls down the channel. If your centre forward started well, getting hold of it, won their initial headers, started to dominate the centre half. So I think that's a big part of what you're saying. Yeah. And in a Russell Martin side, and in a real heavy possession-based side, strikers are so starved of the ball. Yeah. It's probably difficult to get that rhythm and get that upper hand, which I needed. And I think your team used to grow off that. Yeah. If the centre forwards were, you know, getting hold of it, battering the centre halves about. So they're probably a little bit cold and conceding goals at the other end.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. How good Jokeres, by the way.
Former Swansea man, of course, up to 10 goals for the season. Player. Yeah, maybe he left and went to Coventry because he wanted more of the ball. Swansea had 70% of it in this game, but a point for them. Only two off the playoffs at the time of recording. Coventry go to West Brom midweek. Is that a derby? Probably not. Let's move on. A winter of discontent at Carrow Road. Norwich slumping to a fourth defeat of the season there. This one against oddball outfit Blackburn Rovers. Norwich fifth. But as Adrian witnessed firsthand, the natives are restless. What did you make of the post-match comments first, Clarkie, from Dean Smith, who told Radio Norfolk, I think a lot of them have been waiting for this period to happen or wanting it to. He's talking about their supporters. A narrative's been set about it not being good football, despite us having the second or third highest shots in the league. Fortunately, our next game's away from home, because you feel like we have to score two very quick goals at home to get people on our side at the moment. This never ends well, does it? Why do managers do this?
Well, I think he's in advice there to basically roll up his sleeves and say to the fans, come on then. Come on. That's basically what he's doing with that quote. He's saying, come on then, let's have a bit of this. You can't confront the fans like that. That's a really bad idea. And goals don't equate to, or shots, sorry, don't equate to good football. You can be a really ugly team and get loads and loads of shots away. So that's a little bit of a nonsense. That said, I felt a bit sorry for him at the weekend. It was pretty vicious. Well, I think over the top vicious, but maybe I haven't watched Norwich all season, so maybe that's a little bit unfair. But for a team in the playoffs, for the manager to get so much abuse was harsh, in my opinion. That said, the football wasn't good. There was no fluency about it. Those triangles, the quick, sharp interplay, the combinations that we're accustomed to seeing from Norwich at championship level just aren't there. So I do get the frustration. It was a poor performance. Blackburn were incredible in their work rate, though. Just phenomenal. It was one of those matches. I watched the highlights back on the EFL highlights show that Sam was on, and it didn't do justice at all to Blackburn's display, because their pressing was unbelievable. The work rate, the organisation, the way that they went about stopping Norwich playing out of their own half.
All the stuff we said they didn't do last week, basically.
Yeah, because the work rate was terrible last week. There was a terrible attitude. So they obviously had a flea in their ear, made six changes. So I think the players were under no illusions that they had to produce something different, and they did. Norwich couldn't get out of their own half in the first period, just couldn't. Really interesting tactics as well, using the two big guys, Gallagher and Brereton Diaz, as the wingers, and using the two little guys, Tyrese Dolan and Bradley Dack, as two sort of false nine terriers to go and hassle the Norwich centre halves. I thought was really, really interesting, and it worked. Star man for me was John Buckley, who came in central midfield alongside Tyler Morton. I swear there was two of him around the pitch, because every loose ball he got to it. So yeah, he was unreal on the day. So yeah, well played Blackburn. It was a terrific away performance. First goal wins with them. Every time they've conceded first, they lose. Every time they score first, they win. It's just a weird but kind of wonderful season for Blackburn at the moment. It'll obviously only be wonderful if they can stick around and stay in the playoffs. If they play like this, they will. But I'm not convinced they can do this every week.
All right, we'll talk more about Norwich later when we look ahead to their Boxing Day game. Let's go into League One, though, where Charlton continue to drift aimlessly and without a manager. As we record, it's 9:38 on Tuesday, to be precise, listener. We are hearing some reports that former Fit and Proper guest contestant Dean Holden might be getting the job, but we'll wait and see on that one. At the weekend, they were beaten by Bristol Rovers at the Valley. Barton's boys stepping on the gas to win 2-1. Sam, Charlton haven't won a league game since the 22nd of October.
Yeah, the worst team in the division over the last six games, just 2 points, which has kind of crept up on me a little bit. Defensively is a big issue. 13 goals conceded in those six. That said, it'll sound a little bit like a broken record here, but that Charlton 11 that they put out the other day, I mean, that's looking, to my eyes anyway, a lot better than what they've been able to field in recent weeks. The front six in particular. You've got Payne and Fraser, 2 8s, Dobson holding midfielder, and then you've got a front three of Blackett, Taylor, Stockley and Rakitic. I mean, that is not a team that should be in the lower reaches of League One, unquestionably. That said, you look at the goals they conceded and listen back to some of the previous podcasts. If they're going to try and play this type of football, haven't got the defenders to do so, in my opinion. And a tough one for Innes because he scored a brilliant header. Brilliant header.
Stockley messed up for the two goals there, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, Stockley did his utmost to nick it, the centre forward, which I enjoyed, like flung himself at it. But, and then, yeah, just a real catastrophe for the first one. And then the second one, he gives the ball away. Obviously, there's quite a lot still for Bristol Rovers to do. But yeah, he's a little bit at fault for that as well. And there's no one else really at the club I can feel that can go in and be the kind of ball playing centre halves that they desire. So it would be really interesting to see what happens when the new manager comes in, because they were really good in the first half, loads of chances, and then obviously defensive woes in the second period. Credit Joey Barton, he changed his system. He was a back three, took off one of the centre halves and brought on Luca Hull to play right back, brought on Marquis on the hour. He got two goals in the Football League Trophy and he scored a brilliant double. Really well taken goals, and they are just absolutely flying at the moment. One defeat in 12, and I think their forward options nearly on par with probably Ipswich and Plymouth, with Collins, Coburn and Loft and now Marquis coming into form as well. So if they can get the structure of that side right, which has not always been easy for Joey Barton on the defensive side of things, but the forward options are great, and really good victory.
I know this is not easy to say, for anyone to say, but Sam, is Joey Barton good?
Yeah, I think tactically, yeah, probably. Yeah, he makes some good decisions. It's not the first time we've spoken of this. It's just, I was about to say everything that goes with it, which is just the biggest understatement of my podcast history.
You're squirming, but he's good. He is a good manager, and I think he is. And I think we just have to accept that.
All right, we'll hear more from Joey at the end of the show. There's another managerless team in League One. They are MK Dons. Dean Lewington took caretaker charge for the trip to Portsmouth. He left with 3 points. He's not going to be in the dugout when they take on Leicester in the Carabao Cup in midweek, though, because he's having surgery on a hamstring injury. Clarkey, I sort of wonder if maybe Portsmouth might be the next managerless club in League One. Is that a little bit harsh?
It's not harsh when you look at the form table, because over the last six games, they're 23rd. Over the last 10 games, which is a long time, Portsmouth are 22nd of 24 in that form table. So they are on a bad run. I saw them at Wickham recently. Dreadful performance. In this game, they started it pretty well, but couldn't get the goal. And then, yeah, well done to MK Dons for coming back and scoring. Obviously, it was a good corner routine, wasn't there, for the first one. No, for the second goal, rather, from Tucker. I mean, it's a slightly lucky corner routine. It didn't come off as it should, but it eventually came to Tucker, who scored. And Tucker was great in the game. Thought the first goal was one of the crosses of the season from Connor Grant for Bradley Johnson to head home. And Bradley Johnson's going to be the caretaker manager now that Lewington is gone in for the operation. Did you hear that he snuck his dad in, Ray? Dean Lewington. No, it's a classic. So he snuck him in to sit on the bench, and he got sent off basically from the bench because he didn't have the right accreditation because he's not actually part of the staff, is he? So he was there on the pitch in the warm-up, sort of part of it. But as you would, you get, if your dad's a coach, you'd get your dad involved, wouldn't you? Very well respected, Ray Lewington. But yeah, he was politely asked to sort of step outside of the technical area when the game happened, which I guess is fair enough. But yeah, no, well done to MK Dons. Pretty resilient performance. I don't think any of their forward players really had that, weren't that effective in the match, but they produced two good moments to score the goals. And then the rest of it was all about, a little bit like Blackburn, was all about excellent off the ball work. This wasn't a typical MK Dons performance. I think Portsmouth had 63% of possession, which is really, really unusual against MK Dons, but they hung in there. As for Pompey, by the way, he made some big calls. He dropped Ronan Curtis, who's really not been himself this season. And he dropped Dane Scarlett as well, the lad on loan from Spurs. Big calls to drop two important players. And I guess it didn't work, although I felt, based on the previous performances, they probably deserved to sit this one out. The big call, though, was Sean Raggett at the back. I think he's their best defender. Left him out because he wanted Clark Robertson to be at the middle of the three, to get hold of the ball and to pass out from the back. So it was a tactical decision to play better football, to leave Sean Raggett out of the team. You can only get away with that if you win the game, really. And they didn't win the game. And he got a lot of flack, Danny Cowley. But from what I gather, the fans like Danny Cowley. They really want him to succeed, but he's not at the moment. So it's a really awkward situation. They don't want to boo him. They don't want to say Cowley out. But the football's not great, and they need to. I just think there's a huge, huge Christmas period coming up for them. I think they've got Exeter away, Ipswich at home, Charlton at home. I think they need a couple of wins there.
Yeah, they didn't boo him, but they did chant, "This is embarrassing," which I thought was delightfully quaint.
A bit embarrassing, yeah.
Yeah, he might point out that Josh Caroma goal that was incorrectly ruled out was a difference maker. I did enjoy Dean Lewington being asked how much he's enjoying being in temporary charge and just saying, not really. Also, Ray Lewington, the only accreditation he needs is his shorts, surely.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see what happens with Dean Lewington once his hamstring is fixed, if he gets the job or not. In League Two, only two games survived the wintry weather this weekend. The leaders, Leighton Orient, beat Sutton 2-0. Swindon were 1-0 victors at Barrow, which is the game that we'll focus on. Lewis Reed making it a perfect day for your old team, Sam. The Robins converting that early penalty. Up to fourth, only 2 points off the automatic promotion places, despite this being their first win since the end of October. That feels a bit odd.
It does, yeah. And again, something stuck up on me a little bit. Yeah, because obviously I'm across it down there, and the fans haven't been particularly enamoured with the recent performances or the manager. So to be sitting fourth going into Christmas is pretty good shooting, really. And they can be optimistic for the second half of the season. This was a much better display. Plenty of chances in the first half. Created a number against, obviously, Barrow, who had won 8 of 10 home games so far this season. It had been, you know, a pretty tough place to go and get a result. So, in command, weathered a bit of a storm from Barrow in the second period. They went a bit more direct, but there were some real standout performances defensively from Swindon and Blake Tracy. A little bit patched up as they are defensively. Angus McDonald's been out for a couple of months now, maybe even longer. He came back in for his first start and was very good as well. And the margin of victory probably could have been greater. Had a couple of chances on the counter-attack late on. But no, excellent win. Still a bit concerned probably about the goal scoring stakes. Jacob Wakelin, after I did my scouting report, has not been particularly fruitful in front of goal. Jeffcott not involved. There are rumours, strong conversations in the West Country that Charlie Austin, should he be an option, would be a very good option to come back to play at the club that obviously gave him his opportunity in the EFL. So we'll have to watch this space. I think if it was going to happen, it may have happened by now, or there may be, you know, stronger words. So there's obviously someone maybe at the club who's a little bit reticent to
He's in Australia, isn't he? Are the Swindon owners Australian?
They are, yeah. He's terminated his contract, hasn't he?
Australia. I didn't know that.
That happened. That happened a week ago.
Six games for Brisbane Roar.
Happened a week ago. So he's severed ties with Brisbane Roar. He's on his way back, packing up as I speak. So he's going to sign for someone. Wouldn't be the worst shout.
Listen, if you open the scoring against Sydney FC, there's nowhere to go but down after that, is there?
I've got a quick couple of sort of stats-based stuff for you on Swindon and Barrow. Swindon have had the most shots in open play this season in League Two. 28 more than Leighton Orient. So it really is down to their finishing, considering they're not that free-scoring aside. They're creating a lot. And that won't be lost on Swindon, because I know that a lot of what they do is stats-based. So yeah, they've got to sort out the finishing. With Barrow, it's been a really good season, but the five teams above them, they've lost them all. And the goal difference in the matches against the five teams above them is scored 1, conceded 12. So Barrow against the big boys need to sort of up their game. But you know, it's been a very, very good campaign for them. And that is a great result for Swindon. Anyone that goes there and wins has had to work hard for it, I think.
Yeah, didn't even let them have so much as a shot on target in the game. 3 defeats on the spin now for Barrow. Okay, later on, we're going to look at some of the big Boxing Day games. But next, it's time for our scouting report. A couple of loanees for you this week. Sam, you've gone for a young man who already has 10 caps for his country to his name, currently doing good things at Bolton Wanderers.
I didn't actually know that when I sent you his name on the WhatsApp yesterday, thinking, you know, he's been doing well in League One. I'll get ahead of the curve here. He's played 10 times for Northern Ireland.
Still better than Chuba Akpom.
Yes. Oh, no. Yeah, after that penalty, most definitely. Yeah, no, this is a really talented young player who, full Northern Irish international, obviously at Liverpool, 19 years old, on loan at Bolton. Great numbers. Great numbers so far this season. I did him a bit of a disservice. I think he's 4-3 in terms of goals and assists in League One from right wing back. He's got 6 goals, 5 assists in all competitions. Clarkey, as a wide player yourself, coming into the new year with 11 goal involvements already, is great shooting for a guy playing his first football really in the EFL consistently. So started as a right back at Liverpool. Started as a right winger at Liverpool. He's kind of been reverted to a right back at his parent club, but this right wing back role at Bolton seems to really suit him. Quite languid style, leggy. If you're going to compare him to kind of Trent Alexander-Arnold, he's someone that kind of gets at people rather than delivers, you know, uses the defenders as a shield, as Alexander-Arnold does. That's not really his game. He gets at people, he commits them, gets to the byline, and his delivery when he gets there has been sublime this season. Number of goals that he's kind of put on a plate for teammates by just cutting things back, picking the right pass at the right moment. A lot of his goals are similar, just getting in at the far post. His position, when the ball's building on the left-hand side, he looks like a centre-forward. He's always in the box around Deion Charles. Some of his starting positions actually in build-up has been really infield, you know, like kind of that modern fullback. So, and I've seen a lot of coaches speak about him tactically being really, really astute. So, I mean, it's a very clever young player with a really good understanding of the game, but more than anything, incredibly athletic, gets up and down, but really good composure and a good finisher when he gets into the box. So, looks like he's got a really good chance. Obviously, there's a few players in front of him at Liverpool. It'd be better placed now that Nico Williams has left, but, yeah, been really impressed with him so far this season. 7 yellow cards, though. So maybe that's the curb, the way he's diving into some tackles.
And I think playing, if you're playing wing back for different types of teams, it's a very different experience. But I think at Bolton, he's given that that freedom, isn't he, to go high and to get in at the far post. But you can play wing back for other managers and you're pretty much like a fullback. So I think it's, yeah, kudos to him. I think, yeah, he's had a cracking season. Great
stuff.
A
lot of the goals are kind of just, you know, arriving in the 6-yard box, balls getting delivered from the opposite flank. But he got one against Salford in the EFL Cup, which is absolutely magnificent. Starting position infield, receives it back to goal. Lovely little pirouette away from his marker. And then he unleashes this strike, which is kind of whipped, but also pacey, right into the top corner. So I think he probably has got that in his armory, that shooting from distance, as is the chap that's in his place at Liverpool has certainly got an abundance. But I've not seen that too readily. So he looks like he's got, you know, a lot of facets to his game. And I think he's probably become maybe Bolton's most influential player already this season.
Lucky, apologies if this is a bit too close to home, but in his position, so he's 19 and he's registered to Liverpool and he's out on loan. Is he thinking at this point, or how important will it be for him to kind of maybe readjust his expectations and think, you know, I'm thinking of you at Arsenal essentially as the comparison here. You've got to, at some point, I guess, he's 19. Is he thinking, I'm going back into the Liverpool first team, or is he going to be realistic and think, right, this is League One, let's see how I can get on here. Maybe I go to the Championship and we work from there. Because that's got to be absolutely crucial, hasn't it, to any future success?
I think at 19, he's still dreaming of making it at Liverpool. I do, yeah. And he's obviously a player of real ability. And the fact that he's doing well there, he will think, next season, I can be in the first team's matchday squad most weeks. That's what he thinks. Whether that comes to reality or not, and if that is denied him, then he will demand a move, and it'll demand another loan move or a permanent one, probably to a Championship team, just based on what he's done. When I went on loan, it was after I'd played for Arsenal's first team. So I was in there. And then when I was sent out, I knew it was with a view to eventually leaving, because I was a little bit older. But I think for him, he can still dream, and we'll wait and see. But Liverpool have got a lot of very good players and very good young players. So it's going to be tough for him to make it there.
I was going to try and segue to yours by saying another team with a lot of very good players in Nottingham Forest. But I think that might hurt my credibility a little bit. But you've gone for Will Swan, who is tearing it up for Mansfield. He stayed in Nottingham, sure, on loan from Forest for this season. He's had a really good start under Nigel Clough, 7 goals already.
He's loving it. He's absolutely loving it. And he had a good season last season. You'll probably be aware of this in PL2. I think he got 12 goals in 19 starts. It sort of propelled him into the frame, I guess, but Forest's success on the pitch has probably hamstrung his chances there. Unfortunately, that can happen, can't it? Because they've done so well. They've basically signed a new squad. He's way down the pecking order at the City Ground, having made a couple of appearances in the first team there. So he's had to go out on loan, and he's doing really, really well. Nigel Clough wasn't entirely sure about him at the start, I've got to say. He's sort of, a lot of his appearances were from the bench. But he made an impact from the bench. He got 3 goals as a sub earlier on in this season. And now he's earned a starting berth. They basically playing with 2 strikers now, 4-4-2 diamond. And he's got 8 goals. And he's only made 8 starts. So 8 goals, 8 starts, 8 sub appearances. Numbers wise, fantastic. Right up there. He's number 1 in League 2 for XG in open play. So 0.43 of a goal XG per game in open play. It's top of the pile. He's second only for goals per 90 behind Sam Hoskins and Andy Cook, who we all know about here. And I think he has a lot of shots on target per game. He's fourth for that. And looking at his goals, the thing that I would say, well, looking at his general play, he doesn't offer that much. He's not the kind of guy that's going to link play for fun. And yeah, his average passes is pretty low per game. He's not got a huge involvement, but he comes alive inside that final third when there's space to run into or when there's a cross to attack, which is what most strikers do, really. Sam will know this. And he's got a range of finishing. That's what I'll say about him. He scored goals with his left foot. He scored goals with his right foot. He scored 2 towering headers. His last goal was a real brilliant header at the far post. He's got a couple of those. A little bit of pace about him. When there's a ball to be knocked in behind, he can latch onto it and strike them early. So really impressed. He just looks a natural finisher. And this is only his second loan spell. So we'll see how he goes. I'm not sure he's a player that will make it at Forest. Not sure he's a player that will play at the very highest level. but he is someone that will score goals, I think, wherever he ends up. And at the moment, he's finding it pretty easy to score goals in League Two. So, yeah, kudos to him. And yeah, look, if he can keep this up by the end of the season, if Forest don't want him, there'll be a queue of clubs that are looking to sign him up, probably in League One level.
Yeah, and what Mansfield have done in the last few years very cannily is take advantage of Notts County falling out of the Football League, and they are now the club of choice for Forest to send their players on loan to. They've got Riley Harbottle, haven't they, this season as well, and George Shelby before that, and a couple of permanent deals too. Obviously, you've got Gary Crosby assisting Nigel Clough there. So it's a nice little link between
them. I like those connections. It is good. The one other thing, and this really is what separates him from a lot of the guys at the top of the goal scoring charts in League Two, is that he's efficient. He scores from pretty much one every four shots, which it doesn't get much better than that. So, yeah, he doesn't need a lot of chances to get himself on the score sheet. So, he's just a natural with a nose for goal.
That is Will Swan and Connor Bradley, the subjects of this week's scouting report. Next today, we're going to have a look ahead to some of the Boxing Day action. Well, the football on the 26th gets underway at Vicarage Road. Watford hosting Millwall in the no second name to their football club derby. Since losing the reverse 3-0, Watford have only been beaten in one of eight subsequent games. This is not a bold shout by any means, Sam, because they yo-yo like nobody's business. But they look really well set to have a proper run at getting straight back into the Premier League second half of the season, don't they, under Super Slab?
Yeah, I think so. If you kind of compare them to maybe where Norwich are, that's an easy comparison to make right now. They seem to have a bit more momentum, don't they? Players in form, defending incredibly well, four clean sheets on the bounce. And I think the most important thing is that they've appointed someone now who probably has garnered the respect of all the players, I think, straight away, because of the type of career he had, but also what he's done in management as well. He's a bigger name than maybe some that have come before. He probably won't be manipulated maybe from above. So he would be his own man. And I think that it'll probably prove to be a really good appointment. So yeah, they got issues in midfield at the moment. They've obviously gone into the market and signed a couple of players. I think they've got four players that are down relatively long-term in that position. So
signed a random lad from Fluminense and an unattached Leandro Bacuna. I mean, hey Siri, show me Watford's transfer policy. It's that basically, isn't it?
Feels like Bacuna's definitely turned out of Vicarage Road before, doesn't it? But yeah, they needed strengthening, and as I've said so often this season, despite not really having a number nine that jumps out, I know Keenan Davis is there, but I think still there's three or four, isn't there, jostling for that position, jostling for form. But, you know, it's going to be defined this season by Pedro and Sarr's form, them sticking around. And if Pedro continues in this vein of form, then they're going to be in the mix, no question. Because defensively, I said previously, you know, all those guys are still there that have had great success at Championship level. They'll keep an abundance of clean sheets. It's just whether they can get enough goals. And with Sarr and Pedro still at the club, they should be too strong for a Millwall side who have obviously had real woes on their travels this year.
Just a quick one on Keenan Davis. I might have said this before, but he is there are Emil Heskey vibes about Keenan Davis in terms of you're better with him. Even if he's not scoring, you're better with him in the team.
I'm nodding my head enthusiastically, remembering where you and I were both at the playoff semi-final second leg for a Sheffield United, Clarkie, when they brought him on and he wasn't fit, but he just held the ball up.
Yeah, exactly. And I look at their other striker options, and I think they're lightweight by comparison. They don't do the same thing. So I think you've almost got, well, not sacrifice the centre forward spot as the goal scorer, but yeah, it's up to Sarr and Pedro to make sure that they profit. And I think João Pedro at number 10 is, that's where he needs to be. And I think he'll score loads of goals this season.
Millwall, as Sam alluded to, not good on the road. Only two wins away from home all season. They haven't won at Vicarage Road since 2006. If you think they can buck that trend, they are 11-4 for the win with Quinn Bett. Watford 21-20. The draw is 12-5. Good news for Dean Smith. Norwich are away on Boxing Day. They go to Kenilworth Road in the evening kickoff. Luton's game against Millwall fell foul of the weather this weekend. Would Rob Edwards have been happy or sad about that, do you think, Adrian? Because it gives him a bit more training time and not sort of just gearing up for games. But
no, I think he'd be sad about it. I think he just wants to get on with it. Like, it must be really, really frustrating. He's just not had a lot of football experience. And obviously they lost the game at Middlesbrough, didn't they? So he's been sort of, yeah, stewing on that, probably just wants to get out there and unleash his players. And this is a good game to unleash them in, I think. It's not a local derby, but they're sort of both East Anglian. And there's a bit of a history.
Luton are East Anglian. I'm not having that.
You're not having that?
Well, Bedfordshire.
I grew up in East Anglia. I'm sure they were kind of part of it. No, you're probably right. I just see Luton and Norwich being in the same part of the country. But yeah, it's probably nonsense what I've said there. but it's okay. The
might be one of those ones that gets the regional news crossing over. You know, do you know what I mean?
Like, no, because I was brought up in
it's Suffolk, not. You're talking absolutely nonsense, Starkey. But
Luton
I'm trying to
covered by Anglia News.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Yeah,
that's where I'm getting
definitely
it from.
Not, it's definitely not the same part of the country, but the
just 103 miles between them. Just a quick.
What I was going to say is when I'm down at the in-laws in Christchurch near Bournemouth, you get stories about Oxford on the regional news. You know what I mean?
It's an easy mistake to make when you base your football geography on regional news. But yeah, what they need to do here, by the way, Luton, is just tear into Norwich, because the last thing they need, Norwich City, on the back of what Blackburn did, is someone doing the same to them. So I would expect them, even though they've got a different makeup with big guys up front, I would expect them to try and press and squeeze and really hassle this Norwich City team, whether they do it to the centre halves like Blackburn did, or whether they wait for the ball to come into midfield and then they crunch into them. They have to be aggressive because Norwich did not like it. It's going to be a real test for them. It's going to be a test. I would want to be at this game to see Norwich's work rate, because having seen them in the flesh against Blackburn, it felt like Rovers ran twice as far and played twice as aggressive as Norwich. And I want to see if that's the case again, or whether they can do what I saw from Blackburn in the game, because they didn't look like a team that were really fighting for the badge or for the manager. And I think that's what they need to show here. I would expect changes. O'Neill Hernandez, I think, will come into the team. He was very good off the bench, really, really bright. And there's a player that I was considering doing the scouting report on. I might save it for later in the season. But Liam Gibbs, who came on in central midfield for Isaac Hayden, looks a player, really does. He's an all-round central midfielder. And as soon as he came on for Isaac Hayden, who's a good player at this level, Norwich were far better. And they were far better because he's got great mobility. He got around the pitch to pick up second balls and to prompt and to get there and play sharp, fast forward passes. And that's what Norwich lacked until his introduction. So I'd expect Gibbs to start and Hernandez as well.
Yeah, obviously a massive game for Dean Smith, and a couple of stats that I heard in the last couple of days, which I wasn't aware of, just leading into this game. Well, Norwich haven't beaten anyone in the top seven, which I wasn't aware of. Obviously Luton not in the top seven currently, but still, that's a bit of a problem. Two draws and four defeats in their six games against the better sides in the division. And Luton, only two defeats against teams in the top 12. So they've been pretty fruitful in those games against the better sides in the division. That said, Luton have only scored five in their last eight. So I think that's where their problem has been in recent times. And the last time I was at Kenilworth Road is when they beat QPR and beat QPR handsomely, but that was in October. Too many draws since and not enough goals. So that's where Rob Edwards probably needs to improve as his first job. And the other little note I made was, I was sure Rob Edwards, he looks like he's played for Norwich or been affiliated for him. And I looked it up, he played three games there on loan from Blackpool.
Knowledge. I like that.
He does, though, doesn't he? He looks like a cultured Norwich centre-half, left-sided.
95-96 season, maybe. Luton did win the reverse 1-0 at Carrow Road in October. If you think they can do the double over the Canaries, they are 17-10 with Quimbet to get the win here. In League One, we like the look of Ipswich Town versus Oxford United. Ipswich lost at Wickham, knocked off top spot at the weekend. I'll take the blame for that, given that I said that they wouldn't be off the top of the league for the rest of the season. And looking like there's a bit more life about Oxford than we previously thought, with Carl Robinson seeming to have turned things around. I'm filling a little bit here, listener, because I'm just doing a route planner from Oxford to Ipswich to see if Clarkie's going to try and claim that. That's a
medical down. Of course I'm not.
141 miles. Only lost once at home in the league all season, Clarkie of Ipswich, but they've drawn 4 of 11. That might prove costly. I mean, this is the kind of game that you think, Oxford got a point at Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend. It's not going to be easy for them.
I'm still going to hang my hat on Ipswich to get promoted in the top two. I'm still confident on that. But they've got a few defensive injuries at the moment. Stopped keeping clean sheets. I think there's only one in the last 7. And they do have a bit of a problem sort of up against a lower block. And that's obviously what happened the longer the game went on against Wycombe Wanderers. They sat in protecting what they had. Ipswich had 71.2% possession. Played pretty well, created good opportunities, but couldn't finish. And that's kind of, yeah, possession without the sort of killer instinct has been a thing for Ipswich at times this season, but they'll be fine. And they'll start as worthy favourites in this game for sure. But Oxford, they're getting better, definitely. And they were unlucky not to win at Sheffield Wednesday, which is no mean feat. They had more of the ball than the Owls at Hillsborough. And obviously they missed a last minute penalty, didn't they, with Josh Murphy? It was saved. And the thing that stands out for Oxford is the sort of new look defence this season. I know that we're well into the season now, but three of the back four that played at the weekend, Brown, Findlay and Anderson, were all summer signings. And yeah, I think they have improved at the back. It's just can they score enough goals? And this is the type of game where I would feel confident that Oxford can make it hard for Ipswich. I say that because they've been good on the road, Oxford, and their only 3 losses on the road have been 1-0. So any Ipswich Town fans that are sort of rocking up at Portman Road, and it might be a sellout, I'm hearing, which is just amazing, just brilliant that. It might not be a rout. I certainly, you know, the numbers, the form book will tell you that this will be a close game.
Just on that, Clarkie, they've only had 3 clean sheets, Oxford, but they haven't conceded more than 2 in any game.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really interesting quirk considering their early season woes. So think you're bang on there. I expect it to be similarly tight, probably by the odd goal.
Is this your least favourite fixture in the Football League, Sam?
I've made like peace with Ipswich fans. And I was nice to someone in the foyer at Oxford the other day. So. And Robin Cowan's I would say a friend.
What happened to Ipswich? Did you get a stick at Ipswich then?
Just a bit, Clarkie.
Did you get the Dean Smith treatment?
I would suggest it was probably worse than what Dean experienced on Saturday. But
I didn't know that. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear it. I know it's a long time ago, but I'm sorry to hear that.
No problem, mate. No problem.
Just to balance things out a bit, 100 goals and 321 Football League appearances, as that caption on the Football League show told us. I think 15 times on Saturday.
This 100 is very odd. Very odd. It's so odd, in fact, that I counted my cup goals the other day, which I think takes me past 120. So, and my goals in Scotland. Do you know what I mean? So I know what they're doing, but it's, you know, it's 125 or nearabouts.
Okay, it's only 120 odd more than me. Oxford, by the way, 5-1 to get the win with Quimbet. If you think there might be an upset in this one. Now, we've mentioned Mansfield earlier. There's a reprise of last season's playoff semi-final. They take on Northampton at the ground I'm still calling Field Mill. Clarkie, are Mansfield going up or what? I feel like it's been about 5 years I've been asking you this question. I need a satisfactory resolution.
I don't know. I don't see them going up automatically. It's not going to be easy. There are some pretty streetwise teams ahead of them in the table at the moment. And yeah, I mean, I've been bigging up Will Swan, who's been really important for them with those 8 goals, because prior to this sort of purple patch, they hadn't really had a goal scorer. I don't know. I think Northampton are the stronger team. I do. They've got more talent, maybe, Mansfield. They've got a lot more sort of flair and ability in possession. I'm still not sure about the balance of the team. They're too easy to... It's too easy for Mansfield to blow up. Do you know what I mean? Like, Most weeks they'll be good and they'll win a lot of games, but they also crash and burn quite a lot. I think you just have to look at recent times. I think they shipped 3 goals at Crawley, 5 at Swindon, if I'm not mistaken, or against Swindon, and 3 against Harrogate as well. So, yeah, I don't trust Mansfield yet to sort of label them promotion certs. But Northampton lost 3 of 20. They're in with the shout. But what Northampton are ahead of this game is rusty. Only had one game in the last month. They've pretty much had the World Cup off. It was a 0-0 draw with Tranmere. So they need the run, as they say in horse racing.
It's your old club, of course, Sam, Northampton. Briefly, I remembered that playoff semi-final as being quite spiky. Do you carry that into this season's game, or is that not a factor for modern footballers?
Possibly. I think with the same managers, then there's a chance, isn't there, that something may be brought up pre-match in the dressing room. Yeah, two similarly strong outfits, really. And I agree with Clarkey, you can trust Northampton a little bit more, probably because the defensive nous, strong side. Mansfield a little bit more inconsistent, but what they've both got is kind of talismanic forward players who could probably decide this. Sam Hoskins, obviously, his form hasn't really abated at all this season. He's still scoring, assisting, set piece threat, can score from distance. And Reece Oates is back in the mix now for Mansfield. And I think he's probably their best forward player. Mm. And he's probably been badly missed throughout this season. They'd have more points, unquestionably. So they come in buoyed, I think, by his return. Northampton, obviously, on a brilliant run. Haven't lost since 8th of October at home to Salford. So really difficult one to call. I wouldn't like to call it. But I think over the longer period, I think Northampton are probably the stronger side. But yeah, Mansfield pre-season, you wouldn't have imagined a Leyton Orient or a Stevenage doing what they're doing. So I wouldn't be completely astonished if they came good, but they seem to burn me every year. They're the new Salford, I think, Mansfield in my household.
All right, I'm calling this one as a draw. You can get 5-2 on that with Quinbet. That's just about going to do it for us today. But of course, we've got a tweet of the week. This is controversial, chaps, because I've picked one from your friend of mine, Joey Barton. And this is a manager's tweet being analysed, which we don't get very much. Joey has three pictures of the game against Charlton. None of him. Bit of self-deprecation there, which is nice to see. Joey writes, another big performance from the players. 3 points and a first away victory at the Valley since 1958. Thank you to the travelling gas heads, brackets, 1300 plus Sybil, close brackets, on a cold, icy day with the rail network on strike, ... three applause emojis, # UTG blue heart emoji at official BRFC. The details good, Sam, on this. First victory at the Valley since 1958. Feels like the press officer's just told him that as he's got his phone out to tweet it.
I really like the stat. Don't know why, but I just like it. It amuses me more than anything. And I quite like the pictures of the lads. That's quite a nice touch. The rest of it can give or take. And at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I want to see what he comes out with when they lose 4-0 at home to Lincoln. You know, that's the measure of a man, isn't it? So it's a 5 out of 10, because I like the stat and the pictures. But let's see what he's like in the wake of a home defeat when he's getting Dean Smith.
Do you enjoy the reference to the rail strike, Clarkey? Just a bit of, you know.
He's got that about him, hasn't he? He's got the political opinion in him, hasn't he? He's a little bit, he holds back more than Gary Neville, shall we say. But yeah, he's just sort of got that little dig in there, hasn't he? But look, it's a very polite tweet, isn't it? He's thanking the fans. He's giving the credit for the performance to the players. I think that's important to note. Another big performance from the players. He's just deflecting it. But then he follows it up with, look, I've inspired the first win at the Valley since 1958, so haven't I done well as well? So he's ticked every box, I think, here. I think Sam's being harsh. I would give this a solid 7.
I think that Joey was at the Sherry during the World Cup final. I'm just going through his timeline, and he was tweeting prolifically, mainly about the game. Decided to watch ITV halftime debrief due to the quality of Roy Keane's moustache and fanny tickler, applause emoji. But then we go from that to, at Marseille, they used to call Deschamps Le Chat, which translates as the cat. Thanks for that, Joey. You would never have got there without you, pal. They said it was because he was so lucky he had 9 lives. Yeah. Well,
that's the kind of content we're looking for. Yeah.
Oh, and a Mick Lynch retweet. Yeah, of course. Yeah, very, very on brand from Joey. Follow him if you like. I don't know why you'd want to, but do if that's your thing. If you want to follow us, it's at EFL What. What's your handle, Clarkey?
At Adrian J. Clark with an E.
Sam?
At Sammy Parkin _.
Well remembered. Mine is at Matt Davis Adams. You can find Quinbet on social media as well. And if you head to quinbet.com/promotions, you can see all the latest offers they've got for new customers. That will do it for us pre-Christmas. We'll be back with a roundup of the festive action soon enough. But until then, many thanks for your company today. Tell a friend about us if you'd be so kind. Give us a rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, etc. That will help more EFL fans find us. Do have a great Christmas from all of us here. It's goodbye.